This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 177. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Let's go on a great adventure. Things get shady, more lesbian superheroines, fighting and eating dragons, and the Tinker strikes. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, October 16th, 2011. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, and you can subscribe via iTunes, where you should leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. And let's move straight on to My Greatest Adventure, number one, by Lepestre, Ryan, Kent, Collins, and McGuire. So this is restarting a title going back to 1955, which was the first home of the Doom Patrol. And it's also continuing the Weird Worlds title from last year, where they took a bunch of those second feature stories that they were doing for a while, and they decided fairly abruptly to stop doing them. And then they had a whole bunch of them in production. So they decided to knock them out here.
Yeah. And to me, picking this up was just like picking up and continuing that series.
Exactly.
There was no difference.
Just a different name. But we did get the inclusion of Robot Man. And this is really a new take on the character. It's unclear whether this one was ever in the Doom Patrol. And in fact, was there ever a Doom Patrol in the new DCU? Because, again, going back to JLA being the first superhero team, the Doom Patrol in the older continuity predated them. It's really unclear at this point. We'll see as we go through this miniseries whether there's even a reference to Doom Patrol.
But, again, I'm going to stick to my, I guess, love of continuity or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick nits. And
right.
That is, would Cliff even be a robot if there hadn't been a Doom Patrol?
Yeah, because the chief was the one who saved him.
Yeah, and saved him particularly to set up
the Doom Patrol.
The Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. Maybe the chief was around, but he never formed the Doom Patrol.
Or maybe it was someone else that made him into a robot. But to me, this is like the same thing through the rest of it. People like us are going to say, well, why is he like this? And then I think people who are just picking up the comic are going to say, eh.
Yeah, exactly. New readers are like, they don't know Doom Patrol from Adam, so.
Yeah.
There are a lot of references to nanobots during this thing where Cliff is more of a, almost like a transformer robot where he changes shape. He has all these additional senses because of the nanobots around him. And his partner is a character named Maddie Rouge, who, as far as I can tell, is a new character, not someone they brought in, who's a telepath. So she kind of runs this private eye business for Robot Man. It's very interesting. I did enjoy the title. Garbage Man is just continuing from the Weird Worlds title, very much just continuing to the next issue. I can take or leave this one. I'm still trying to figure out if they're paying royalties to Swamp Thing, because to me it's pretty much the same concept.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Garbage instead of green,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say as I see what the point of this one is. But...
Right. But I think it's made up by Tanga. McGuire continues his storyline, again, from Weird Worlds. I really do enjoy this one because this character is working for some other galactic hero, not that she wants to.
Yeah, she kind of gets
sucked into
it.
This thing to be the protector of this world. She just wanted to stop in and say hi, and now she's kind of stuck there.
I don't think she could carry a whole comic.
No.
But as this, you know, partial story, I think it's very good.
Oh, yeah. The Shade, number 1 of 12 by Robinson and Hamner. James Robinson returns to the character from his classic Starman series. And by the way, if you're looking for some major storyline to read that's pretty much kept by itself, it doesn't really tie into other things, I want to just read this one storyline end-to-end. The classic Starman storyline from James Robinson is definitely the way to go. And there are many different editions of that in soft copy and hard copy.
That's the Jack as Starman.
Jack as Starman.
Now, Mark, before we go any further on this comic, is this Shade the same Shade that's in the Justice League Dark?
In Justice League Dark? No, it isn't. That is Shade the Changing Man, a character they created in the 70s. Very trippy type of character. So it's not in any way related to the Shade character you're seeing here, because the Shade character from here is was a Golden Age villain.
Have I read anything with this other Shade in it?
Yeah, because he was in a recent JLA storyline.
So all along I was reading about somebody who I thought was somebody else. This is very confusing to me.
We have seen Shade the Changing Man for quite a while. So the one you've seen is the one you saw in the Starman series.
Okay.
Golden Age villain, ends up being a quasi-good guy. So the question is, why did they keep reusing these names? Well, it's all about copyrights, because in the 70s, by that point, they hadn't used the Shade character for years, and they didn't want to lose the copyright for the name. So, okay, reuse the character as this.
So was Shade the Changing Man always a good guy? Do you know?
I believe so. More of a wild card than necessarily a good guy.
So maybe sort of like the Creeper or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right.
So that's the deal on that.
That's very confusing to
me. So even more confusing here is that the Mikal Starman character appears, who's still in continuity, which begs the question, is the original Starman, the Golden Age Starman, still in continuity?
Because he was in the Justice Society, which didn't exist in this continuity.
Exactly. I'm getting more and more the impression that there was a Justice Society, but they were true mystery men and weren't even public heroes. That's what I'm starting to guess.
So you think it's that rather than these are actually Earth 2 books, like this one and The Huntress?
I think because of everything going on here, I think this is an Earth 2 title. I think there was a Justice Society on both Earths. That's my opinion. So this Mikal character still has a relationship with Congorilla, which they set up in the JLA series that's no longer in continuity. So weird things going on here. We also see that Shade is still in a relationship with Hope O'Dare.
And that was set up in the original Starman.
Right.
Well, not the original Starman series.
The classic
James
Robinson
Starman series.
And Hope is a cop from a long line of cops in Opal City.
And Shade used to be a villain, so there's a little bit of weirdness in their relationship.
Right, right. We also see William Von Hammer, who I had to look up, to be honest, but I suspected I knew who he was. He is, in fact, Enemy Ace, a World War I war hero from the DCU, who was introduced back in, I think, one of the very earliest issues of the Classic Showcase title. And then he was in some Vertigo stuff, I think, in the 90s. So this is all very confusing from a continuity standpoint. Is this title, in fact, happening on Earth 2, just like the Huntress title, which is all theory at this point? They've not stated in any way that this isn't happening on the regular Earth, but all the weird discrepancies seem to point out that's what's going on. Ironically, the reason you have multiple Earths really in the first place is that there were stories in the very early years of DC that were hard to explain, like when Batman had a gun. And they went, oh, that's not in the same continuity.
Right.
So mistakes made or editorial things that were missed are yet again cropping up less than 2 months into the new DCU. Now, either this is a grand plan.
Yes, it's a secret grand plan that they're not sharing with us.
Which a hopeful part of me thinks is the case, but the realistic me part of me thinks, no, they've screwed up things before. They've screwed it up this time again.
Yeah.
But that all being said, it's a very good title, and it's a very interesting storyline. There's a huge amount of dialogue going on, a lot of character relationship things going on. Really enjoyed that. And that really goes back to the James Robinson Starman title.
Yes, and I think James Robinson is one of those authors who I will read whatever he writes.
Yeah. Yep. Even though he didn't, I don't think, did a very good job on the recent JLA title, I'm wondering how it would have gone had he been given the chance to really take it forward and not get cut off with the reboot.
Indeed. And maybe he works better with the more obscure characters.
That could be.
You know, because you have more leeway with those than you do with a Superman and stuff.
That's true. Batwoman number 2 by Williams III and Blackman. And the great artwork continues in this title. They're really pushing the lesbian angle for Batwoman. It's even now in her title description. If you read on the first splash page, there's a paragraph at the bottom left, I believe, where it's like, she's a proud lesbian. We're really going to push this a lot.
Well, it's the whole diversity thing.
Right, exactly.
We are diverse.
And this is the all-girl title that the complainers back at Comic-Con wanted. You know, we want to see more female titles. Well, that's what you're getting here. The character of Cameron Chase returns.
She's a lot meaner now.
Yes, she is. She was a character introduced in the 90s and actually had her own title for a while. As before, she's working for the DEO. But as you said, she's a much meaner character now. And it's clear that the DEO is much more interested in shutting down vigilante superheroes now.
I'm guessing they either recruit them or shut them down.
Exactly. If they can't control them, they want them out.
Right. I did like how Batman told Batwoman to keep her sidekick out of this one issue they're in now.
Right.
Because dead sidekicks die and then come back as villains.
Right. Now, this is kind of an artistic license by Williams, but nobody seems to notice how pale white Kate Kane is compared to everyone else. When she's in her civilian, she's a ghost. She's really, really, really pale.
Well, you know, she is. And then Batwoman is also very pale.
Right. And you'd think, okay, nobody puts these two and two together.
Now, I know that redheads tend to be pale, but she's not just pale. She's white.
Right.
Like charcoal gray.
Yes.
Now, I thought at first when we were reading it that maybe she used that as makeup, you know, like she was a gothy kind of person.
Right.
But when even all your arms and stuff
are
that color.
That's what she is.
Yeah.
And we see Maggie Sawyer, who's investigating this were-gang battle.
Yeah, suddenly we have were-gangs.
Yeah.
This is like, what, the Batman Beyond, you know?
Right. And we see her walk through the battle. So she's recognizing things and going, well, this happened here and this happened here, recreating it in her mind. And as you said, at the end, we have this conversation with Kate and Bruce. Enjoying this a lot. And I think they finally got around to putting out the Batwoman title, and that helps. That's been the problem all along here. Demon Knights number 2 by Cornell and Neves. And we get more medieval action. We get a lot of action in this issue. Fighting dragons. And a great line from Vandal Savage. Excellent! I haven't eaten one of these in centuries!
Yes, and then through the whole thing, you see Vandal eating the dragon. It was very weird.
And at one point, he beats one dragon with the head of another one. And we meet Al Jabbar, I don't know how you pronounce it, J-A-B-R, who's another magic user. At one point in the battle, Etrigan jumps in a dragon's mouth and then blows him up from the inside. We also meet the character of the horsewoman, who they said was coming. And this is a character, according, again, going to from Comic-Con. she's a disabled character. She rides a horse, but she can't actually walk.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she ends up running into these metal dragons, which are really weird. The group tells the townspeople to flee because the town's about to be taken out, but they would rather just sell goods to whoever wins the battle. They're like, yeah, people come through here and sack the place all the time. What's the difference? And Etrigan flies away with Madame Xanadu, and they run into even more dragons. And Lefay and Mordru send a firebomb to just wipe out the town. And as I said, there's an enormous amount of action going on in this issue. Lots of stuff happening. And really enjoying this a lot.
Yeah, this is a really good comic. I didn't think that I would like it, but I do. I really do like the whole Vandal Savage as really more of a savage
right.
person at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't grown into the urbane
right.
savage that we know from current continuity.
Mm-hmm. Unwritten number 30 by Vertigo.
Hey, this isn't a DC title.
I know.
Hey.
Yeah, by Carrion Gross. And this is ending the Tinker storyline. What's happening is we're going back and forth between current day and the 1930s, where this woman is writing and doing the art for this comic, early comic book. But as a woman, she can't really get in the industry, so she has her neighbor send it in. And William Taylor's tried to find her because he's realized that the great narrative that's controlling the populace, as it were, that is a whole bunch of stuff from this cabal, is now going to be coming out in more popular media like comic books and the pulps. So William Taylor and Miriam end up having a child who somehow gains the powers of the Tinker, a character I still think that Cavalier and Clay should be getting some royalties for. And Miriam ends up dying of cancer. So
when this child is still very young,
he goes into,
he has to take care of the kid.
Right.
To me, this is like, oh, this is what gave him the idea to have Tommy Taylor.
Right.
He can then write a character that, you know, this is what I want this kid to be.
Can infuse these abilities
and infuse him into the
an actual
kid that's
person.
Born. Yeah.
Right. So Tinker shows up in the current day as an adult to attack Tommy, and then Frankenstein, who we've seen before in this title, appears to defend Tommy. Tinker becomes confused, and then he begins to age rapidly because he's an old man. He was born in 35, and in the end, he goes to the underworld to save his beloved, which is from the storyline in the Tinker comic.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice. Mm-hmm. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Richie finds out that all the people that Tommy has known are being murdered, which are clearly, the cabal's trying to get him to come out into the open by doing this.
Well, and it doesn't appear that, I mean, a lot of them appear to have been murdered, but they've also set up accidents and
right.
suicides. So it's not like, oh, somebody's murdering them. The media just thinks It's a weird coincidence.
Yeah. Which takes us now on to the next storyline, which is Tommy Taylor and the War of Words. And we've learned that this is going to be bi-weekly for the next 5 months. There'll be the regular issue, and then there's going to be a 0.5 issue that's going to tell us more about the cabal and the history of the group and some information about the characters in the title, more backstory. So that 0.5 is just going to wreak havoc with inventory systems everywhere.
Yes, poor Mark just got his stuff re-indexed, and now what's going to happen?
I don't know how 0.5 is going to work. All right. Sorry, there's no Who's on the Cover this week.
Because last week was a special
double issue.
Oh, well. That's
oh, well.
All right.
Yeah.
Didn't guess last week anyways.
Right. Just a reminder to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including Mindy's Comic A Day blog. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.